type of commander who simply received them due to the immense respect and fear his followers had in him. Briln did as the others, and in addition kept his head low. Garrosh, should he desire it, could have that head immediately.
"Briln," rumbled the war chief, "a long journey you've had."
"A short one, when in service to the Horde, and you,"
the captain returned, daring to peer up under his thick brow.
"And surely less dangerous than the trek from which my war chief's obviously just come. We do what we do for the greater cause."
Garrosh stared past him at the cages.
"Eight. There were supposed to be more. There were troubles. Storms. Yes. And the unrest of the cargo. Much of the concoction meant to keep the beasts docile was lost, and so we could do only what we could do."
Even as he spoke, Briln felt his shame growing. His replies sounded so weak, he thought it a wonder Garrosh did not cut out his tongue to make him stop.
"Eight," the war chief repeated. "Show them to me."
Briln was now certain of his fate. Garrosh would not take his head. He would let one of the beasts rip the captain to shreds. Briln could not blame the war chief. It was a reasonable punishment for one who had so badly failed. He led Garrosh and the others to the first of the cages. Inside, the beast, smelling the nearness of so many orcs, stirred. The sides of the cage shook.
"Pull back the tarp," the captain ordered.
Four of the crew used the attached ropes to pull back the tarp over the cage door. As they did, the shaking increased and a growl rose. From the other cages there came answering sounds. Briln felt a moment of déjà vu and half expected one or more of the creatures to break free. Guards with spears quickly moved in just in case they had to defend the war chief. The captain took no comfort in the awed expressions of several of those with Garrosh. They had every reason to be amazed and not a little wary of the prizes that their leader had ordered shipped from Northrend. However, none of them had been assigned the task. They were safe. Briln was not. Garrosh stepped closer. Too close for the captain's taste. The beast, apparently of the same opinion, leapt forward and tried to fit an arm through the bars. Unlike the one monster, this creature failed. He sought then to bend the bars in order to make a better attempt, but although they creaked ominously, they did not give. For now. The war chief appeared unimpressed by the ferocity of the caged horror. Looking to the Corcron, he said,
"They'll have to be reminded of their purpose. And what will happen if they don't follow through?"
It was the first time in ages that Briln was reminded that, despite everything, the beasts were nearly as intelligent as their captors. Much more primitive, certainly, but nearly as intelligent. One of Garrosh's guards gestured to another Corcron standing by the entrance to a metal longhouse just north of the area. Something had been planned for just this occasion, and the captain had an idea what it was. The grim guard disappeared into the longhouse. All the while the beast before Garrosh raged, now joined with savage gusto by the other seven. Everywhere orcs and goblins tensed, awaiting disaster. Only the war chief and the Corcron remained absolutely calm, even expectant. Several startled grunts suddenly arose from the longhouse. They were like nothing Briln had ever heard. No, they did resemble something. Although higher in pitch and sounding more curious than frightened, they were very much akin to the deeper voices of the cargo. And the creatures in the cargo knew it also. Almost as one, the eight cages grew silent. Garrosh nodded to the one before him. The war chief did not look happy with what had just taken place, but seemed resigned to it.
You understand. They are well, as I have promised. You will all thus keep your promise.
There was a grunt from the cage. Garrosh signaled for the tarp to be let down again. Only when it had completely covered up the cargo did Brilln breathe easier. The guard who had entered the longhouse exited again, this time to report to the warchief. He looked a bit anxious as he neared. Garrosh indicated that the party, including the captain, should step further away from the cages.
I did as you commanded,
the Corcron muttered, speaking so that only those with Garrosh could hear.
I gave some of the younglings a share of that sweetened meat their kind liked so much. They raised a real ruckus. Was it enough?
Garrosh nodded approval.
The adult beasts heard them. They should stay docile now. They just had to be reminded about our deal.
At that moment, Brilln found he did not envy Garrosh. The complexities of command in such times surely tore at Garrosh's sense of honor constantly as he sought to do what was best for his followers in the long run.
He must have stared too long at the warchief, for Garrosh abruptly looked back at him. The legendary warrior's brow furrowed. How many died to bring even these 8 here?
Brilln made an estimate that included not only those lost when their ships went down, but also those lost in getting the beasts to the port in Northrend. Having tried continuously to avoid thinking of those who had given their lives while he had survived, the captain was dismayed by the number he told the warchief. Garrosh was equally dismayed and did not entirely hide that fact.
As many as that. A great price. But it'll be worth their sacrifices, and more when Ashen Vale falls to us.
The Horde leader straightened, now looking every bit the dedicated, confident commander.
They who have died to bring these beasts here will stand beside us in spirit as we crush our foes. When the last outpost falls, this victory will belong as much to them as to those of us who are there to see it happen.
His vow brought cheers from those surrounding him, even Brilln. If he was to be executed, he hoped that at least he would be remembered along with all the other dead involved in this mission. It was more than he could ask.
Captain Brilln.
The mariner swallowed. He immediately slapped his fist against his chest again, then bent his head so as to offer his neck.
My warchief, I can't give any excuse for my failure. You command that we bring you 10, and I deliver only 8. Many of those who perished did so as part of the fleet that I oversaw.
Brilln waited for Gore Howl to fall, but when the fabled axe did not cut off his head, he went on.
My warchief, I confess all these failures, all these stains to my honor, and await my fate.
There was silence. Then he heard Garrosh say,
Your honor is your life. Yes, my warchief, and your life you offer to me.
Again Brilln agreed. At the same time he thought to himself,
My disgrace is great. Garrosh rightly makes me suffer for my failures before granting me a proper death to atone for them.
So, if your life is mine, then your honor is mine.
And as it is my honor at stake, I would have it redeemed in battle.
The captain could not help gaping as he looked up.
I don't understand, warchief. You will join us as we march through Ashen Vale and see your work crush the Alliance. You will stand at the forefront, and if you die, your name will be spoken with pride by our people for generations.
Garrosh himself offered Brilln a hand up. The captain stared wide-eyed.
Your first mate will now be captain. You'll now command soldiers in combat, and you will serve directly under me."
Brilln's chest swelled with pride.
"I will slay 100 night elves before they bring me down. I will destroy Silverwing Outpost myself."
The war chief chuckled.
"Fight well. That's what I ask." "I will."
There was a rumble from the closest cage, but a tentative one that did not threaten. The creatures were subdued.
"We leave at sunrise tomorrow,"
Garrosh announced with confidence, ignoring the fact that he had clearly just arrived himself after what must have been a strenuous ride.
"The first stage of my plans at work on the Night Elves in Ashen Vale already. Their communications with Darnassus are cut off, and they will be making many assumptions as to what comes next based on past wars."
He gestured at the cages.
"They'll die discovering just what great fools they've been made."
The nearest beast rumbled again, this time seeming to echo the war chief's triumphant tone. Brilln's grin widened. He would live to see his work unleashed upon the Night Elves. He would live to know that he had served the Horde well. And he would live to see the beginning of a new world, one forged by the hand of the Horde, not the Alliance.
Tyranda and Malfurion had chosen to have the summit outside, in an area often used for grand events. They could have used the temple where they had held their wedding, but part of the choice had to do with the Gilneans. It had been agreed by both that the introduction of Gen's people to the Alliance would be better served outside, where some of those who might be discomforted by their presence would be able to avoid feeling trapped. Now, with seating arranged in more circular fashion save for an entrance to the east, the highest-ranking Night Elves seated themselves and then awaited the entrances of their guests. All had now arrived, save the Magi of Dalaran, whose ruling council, the Kirin Tor, had declined to send a representative due to Dalaran's desire to remain a bridge between the two warring sides. In Dalaran, Magi of the Horde were as welcome as those serving the Alliance. Tyranda and Malfurion had the seats of honor at the opposing end from the entrance. Sentinels in their full uniforms stood as honor guard near not only the High Priestess and Archdruid, but also the entrance, where they would flank each of the visiting contingents. But this was more than merely the official introduction of the summit. The entrances would be climaxed by the ceremony of induction, when new members of the Alliance would be added by call of vote. If a new member was accepted, it made sense that its representatives would then seat themselves and become part of the discussion to follow. To wait until a gathering was nearly at the end was ludicrous. And if a supplicant was rejected, it also made sense for that party to depart as quickly as possible, so as to keep its shame to a minimum. On the surface, there was no sign of the turmoil going on in Darnassus. News had reached the pair that something, exactly what it was had not been made clear, had happened to Maiev's brother in the course of the investigation. Malfurion and Tyranda only knew that Gerard was bedridden from injury. The High Priestess had sent healers, and so there was apparently no fear of permanent injury, but both leaders desired to speak with Maiev's brother as soon as matters permitted. Archmage Mordant had also promised that the Highborn would remain quiet about the investigation during the events, though Varden had voiced some opposition to that. The spellcasters had no active role in the summit, their situation strictly a Night Elf matter, and of no business to the Alliance as a whole. When all were seated save for those making their entrance, Tyranda signaled the trumpeters. The horns blared, and the procession of Alliance members commenced. So that there would be no quarrels, the positions were chosen by lots. Thus it was that by sheer chance the first to enter were the gnomes, led by Gelban Mechatork in his Mechanostrider. The gnomes were followed by the representatives of Theramore, and so on. Each contingent sought to display to the best of their abilities their prowess. Wondrous and unnerving mechanisms traveled with the gnomes. The dwarves performed martial feats with their hammers as they marched, revealing the swiftness and dexterity their stout forms belied. Each time one faction stepped through the entrance, the anthem of its land played. At the sound of the first note, the night elves rose in respect to their guests, and remained so as one group followed another. Around the place of gathering, the banners of each delegation fluttered proud and strong, even though those in attendance did not feel any breeze themselves. The well-focused wind was the Archdruid's doing. Each procession halted before the High Priestess and Archdruid. There the ruler or lead representative was greeted by a nod from the two night elves. It was yet another manner by which the pair thanked all those who attended, and also hopefully helped put their guests in a good mood for the discussions to come. Stormwind was one of the last to enter, but was among the most impressive. Varian led a crack contingent of his finest soldiers, and he himself was clad in armor that shone like the sun, so polished it was. Across his breastplate was emblazoned a regal lion's head. At his side was sheathed his legendary blade. Next to him strode Anduin, the prince dressed in a blue and gold suit designed for the royal court, as opposed to war. Upon reaching Tyrande and Malfurion, Varian gave a sweeping bow. The theatrical flourish was not in keeping with his stolid demeanor, but before Malfurion or the High Priestess could decipher what it might mean, the King of Stormwind had moved on. The last of the members of the Alliance seated themselves. Tyrande looked about, saw that all awaited what was next to come. Sharing a hopeful look with the Archdruid, she rose. "Sisters and brothers of the Alliance, comrades and friends, I call for a vote to open this gathering." In the same order that they had entered, the representatives cast their vote as she requested. The motion was a formality and passed without any dissension. "My friends," Tyrande went on, "it is with gratitude that the Archdruid and I greet all of you. That you have chosen to join together at this summit is a true sign of hope in a troubled time." There were murmurs of agreement from some of the members and their parties. "We have many grave matters to discuss," the High Priestess continued. "Many of you have suffered dearly since the madness of Deathwing tore Azeroth asunder, and are rightfully concerned that the Alliance might demand more from your people before the lands can heal themselves. I cannot promise that this will not happen." Now, there were wary glances. Yet all respected Tyrande and her husband so much that no one saw fit to voice their concerns on that very subject, for the moment. Malfurion's hand touched hers. Tyrande looked at the entrance. She saw no one, but the Archdruid had clearly noted some signal. "But before we can begin those discussions in earnest, we must ensure that we do so with every possible valued member present. And today we have those who would seek to become one of us, who would seek to share in our efforts to strengthen the Alliance." A horn sounded, and immediately after, the anthem of Gilneas played. Heads turned with anticipation toward the entrance. Tyrande and Malfurion glanced at King Varian, but his expression still revealed nothing. A stillness fell over the audience as the first figure stepped into sight. Ghen Greymane. He himself bore the banner of Gilneas, a red design consisting of a circle with three vertical lines akin to lances, and another line bisecting the circle itself, all set in a field of gray, into the assembly, carrying it with a pride and strength worthy of a warrior much younger.
in contrast to the splendor displayed by many in the audience, Gen wore the same simple, loose garments that he had during the banquet, and when the first of his people followed him into the assembly, they were seen to be dressed similarly. Where there had only been a small band at the banquet, with Gen now marched a number that not coincidentally matched the strength of Stormwind's contingent. Gen obviously desired to show the others that he could offer the Alliance a powerful ally. Yet although the men and women of Gilneas looked to be sturdy of build and clearly willing fighters, they were noticeably unarmed. Even the pole upon which their banner fluttered had no point at the top, meaning that it could not represent any sort of weapon. It was as if the Gilneans sought to prove to their counterparts that they had no use for such. Gen paused before the Night Elf leaders, acknowledging them as those before had. Then, in a change from the entrance of the other kingdoms, he took the pole and thrust the bottom hard into the ground.
"Gilneas stands before you," the king called to all around him and his followers. "Gilneas stands before you to atone for its sins by offering its might to any and all of the Alliance who need it. No truer brother will there be to any in their time of distress."
He stepped back to join Edric and the others. The Gilneans formed an arc facing every direction except the entrance, pointedly making certain that no matter where one sat in the assembly, he or she would be viewing some member of Gen's band more or less in full.
"And lest anyone think us of weak use in battle, of being unable to defend our brothers beside us, we now hope to dispel that misconception."
With that, Gen and his people transformed. Their bodies swelled, growing a third again in girth and height. Although originally loose-fitting, the Gilneans' clothing still proved too tight for this shift, and shirts and jerkins ripped loudly. Hair sprouted over the Gilneans' arms, legs, chests, and faces, spreading so thick that it became fur. Beneath the fur came the sounds of cracking and popping, of bones shifting and tendons stretching into positions of which they should not have been accustomed. Their arms and legs twisted as their forms contorted, the legs turning sleeker, more akin to those of a swift predator. Each figure became hunched, but in that manner of a powerfully built beast. As the audience watched, rapt, the Gilneans' hands stretched, and the nails grew into long, savage claws. Yet that paled in comparison to the astounding metamorphosis of their faces. It was not just that the ears narrowed and stretched, but that the mouth and nose pushed forward, melded together, and created a muzzle filled with sharp teeth capable of rending through flesh without trouble. The Worgen stood before the Alliance. The lupine figures held their ground, although there was in them the evident urge to run, to hunt. They did not turn from the gazes of the crowd, instead staring confidently back. Gen Greymane, his chest heaving from adrenaline, eyed Malfurion and Tyrande. They nodded in turn. There was no greater way to emphasize the worth of the Gilneans to the Alliance than for the refugees to reveal their full strength. The Gilneans had not always been among the Worgen, though, and not all of their people were affected. Many were, however, and it was, to Malfurion's shame, he himself who was in great part to blame. It had begun with other druids, those experimenting with the pack form. They had called upon the power to shift into large wolves, only to discover too late that in these forms they lost control of themselves. Blood had been shed. Malfurion was one of those nearly lost, the aid of the demigod Cenarius all that saved him. Finally aware of the threat, Malfurion had banned the form's use. However, unbeknownst to him, a group of druids had gathered in secret to continue its efforts. Using the legendary artifact called the Scythe of Elune, they had sought to tame the wolf form, only to have the scythe transform them into the first of the Worgen. Bringing the savage creatures under control, Malfurion dismissed the advice of others who demanded their destruction and cast the Worgen into a pocket dimension within the Emerald Dream, where they lay in a taming sleep under the tree Duralnir. That was supposed to have been the end of the tragic matter, and it would have been, if not for the human archmage Erugal. Under the orders of a desperate Gen seeking aid against the scourge outside Gilneas's great wall, the mage had pulled the Worgen to the kingdom, and once the curse of the Worgen had entered, it spread through the populace swiftly. Yet the Gilneans had discovered the means to control their feral nature and turn what had been evil into, at least to a point, a force to benefit themselves in regards to not only the Alliance, but also the eventual liberation of their homeland.
"We are Gilneas,"
Gen Greymane rumbled, his voice still distinctly his own, albeit now with a guttural addition to it.
"We are the Worgen."
The king howled. The sound was not meant to disturb or frighten, only to again point out the power of him and his people. In that it served well, for even the dour Dark Irons looked with great respect and interest at the might of the Worgen. As Gen's howl reached its crescendo, the others with him added their voices. Yet even that paled when from beyond the summit, from deep within the forest, other Worgen voices answered the call. Their combined howl lasted but a scant few seconds, yet that was long enough for the moment to burn into the memories of most there. As Gen ceased, and his people near and far immediately did the same, the king of Gilneas concluded,
"We humbly submit ourselves before our brethren for full membership in the Alliance."
No one responded at first, so unsettling was the sight. Rising, Malfurion pointed at the Worgen. "A few of you know the old tales of the Worgen and their ferocity. You know the stories of their unthinking evil. To both you and those unfamiliar with the stories, what stands before you has little link to either legends or the past. These fighters of Gilneas have tamed the curse. That which was once a deadly threat is now forevermore a force for good, a force for the Alliance." The Archdruid's words rang throughout the assembly. Gen and the Worgen waited as the emissaries digested both what Malfurion had said and, more importantly, what they had just witnessed. Murmuring rose among the representatives, and they quickly became more animated. Curdren suddenly rose.
"Wildhammer welcomes the strength of the Worgen, and a Gilneas."
Tervash immediately followed.
"Theramore seconds that welcome."
At these pronouncements, applause burst from many sections of the gathering. Applause for Gilneas. Several of the emissaries and members of their parties saluted Gen's people in one manner or another. Tyranda, touching her husband's hand, took command of events again.
"You have witnessed the might of Gilneas and heard its request to enter back into the Alliance," the High Priestess called, echoing Malfurion's sentiments.
"I say that after seeing this display, and if there are no objections, we shall begin a vote for approval immediately."
The High Priestess let her gaze sweep over the assembly, focusing no longer on Stormwind than she did any other faction. There was no objection, and even Varian seemed in a reasonable mood.
"I call for a vote by acclamation," the Archdruid next proclaimed, following the course of action that they had discussed previous to the gathering.
"A single voice to acknowledge the welcome of the Worgen into the Alliance. All those in favor..."
The chorus of eyes began to resound, their enthusiasm matching that of the Worgen's earlier howl. Malfurion and Tyranda glanced down at Gen, who gave them a grateful look in turn. And then, from where the contingent of Stormwind sat, King Varian silently stood. The effect was immediate. The shouting died. The two Night Elves and Gen stared at Varian, whose face revealed nothing of his intentions. Members of the Alliance, my good Night Elf hosts, I'd like to speak. Even Prince Anduin appeared uncertain as to what his father planned, although he did not seem worried, only curious. Tyranda signaled for attention, then said, "Stormwind has asked to speak. Please go on, King Varian." The ex-gladiator and slave brooded for a moment. Finally he said, "Everyone knows that there's no love lost between Stormwind and Gilneas. Everyone knows why." Utter quiet fell upon the assembly. Gen's expression was unreadable as he waited for Varian to go on, but his ears lay flat in concern. A sentinel suddenly stood behind the High Priestess. Tyranda touched Malfurion's hand again, and he nodded to indicate that he would keep the proceedings going. The Archdruid understood that whatever it was that would make someone interrupt the High Priestess at such a delicate time had to be as significant as the murders of the two Highborn. A third, he wondered. Praying that it was not so, the Archdruid leaned forward so as to indicate to Varian that while Tyranda might have to leave, it was no slight to Stormwind. Varian cocked his head as if to say he took no insult from the High Priestess's departure. The Lord of Stormwind then continued, "The benefit that an ally such as Gilneas offers us is obvious. While our skills in combat more than match those of the orcs and their allies, there's always been a hunger that the Horde has thrived upon that we, so civilized, no longer seem to have. The Worgen offer us that righteous hunger to overcome all obstacles in battle, to keep the Alliance from splintering or merely sitting back as the orcs take one land after another." Gen's eyes widened, and even Malfurion could not help but feel his hope stir at such a speech. "I considered damned long and hard on this, I promise you," Varian told all. "Such an ally can help us easily hold the Horde's ambitions at bay, maybe even push them back." The king indicated Gen and the Gilneans. "An ally of such honor, of such courage, I'd be more than pleased to fight beside." His words brought cheer. Even the Worgen could no longer restrain themselves, several of the younger ones giving out short howls. Varian now turned his attention to Malfurion. "Archdruid, you called before for a vote by acclamation, a vote I interrupted. My apologies for letting that happen. I'd meant to ask to speak sooner." Smiling, Malfurion answered, "I would be happy to call for it again, King Varian." "That won't be necessary." The human monarch's expression went through a stunning transformation. A dark cast spread over it as Varian eyed Gen Greymane. Varian spat in the Gilnean's direction. "Calling for it again would be a waste of time," the Lord of Stormwind snarled at his counterpart below. "For I'd never give consent to allow these mongrels into the Alliance." Shouts of consternation erupted, especially among the Worgen. The one that was Edric took a step toward Varian, but Gen grabbed the young warrior's shoulder and pulled him back. The two Worgen bared their teeth at one another, Edric quickly becoming cowed. "Honor and trust. These are what the Alliance needs, not these beasts that even when they paraded as men were lacking in both. What happens if they choose to cut themselves off once more? Will they even bother to give us warning?"
Can we trust them even to do that?
Varian snapped his fingers, and his retinue joined him on their feet, Anduin the last and most hesitant. As I've already said to many, I find nothing worthy, nothing honorable in this pack of hounds. And so I will never vote aye to their admission back into the fold. And with that, Varian led Stormwind out of the summit as chaos erupted among the other representatives, and Malfurion Stormrage watched all his hopes crumble before his eyes.
Chapter 15. Choices. Everyone, remain seated, please.
The crowd, though, did not hear the Archdruid. Everywhere the various factions of the Alliance argued with one another as to what had just happened and what it meant to the summit as a whole. The voice of one Night Elf was easily drowned out by such a din. But Malfurion Stormrage was more than merely a Night Elf, and more than merely a Druid. Deafening thunder shook the assembly, and a single brilliant bolt of lightning right before the Archdruid's position guaranteed that all attention returned to him.
"You know my feelings on this situation," he said to them, "and I can assure all of you that this is not over."
No one argued, although in many eyes he read disagreement. Malfurion looked to Gen Greymane to reassure him, only to find that the Worgen had slipped out as swiftly and silently as the wolves they resembled. Concealing his own dismay, the Archdruid pressed,
"I will attend to this matter. For the moment, I call for a vote to end the summit for today and invite all representatives and their retinues to partake of the splendor of Darnassus."
"Sounds like a good notion to me. Me throat's parched from all this politicking," Curdren bellowed. "If it means getting some ale and food faster, it's got me vote."
The dwarf's lusty response eased the situation, and the vote to end for the day passed without further question as to whether there would be a second day. As the assembly dispersed, Malfurion summoned one of the sentinels flanking his and Tyrande's seats. "Did the High Priestess inform you as to why she had to leave?"
"No, Archdruid."
"Do you know where she went?"
"The temple, I believe."
Malfurion thought for a moment. "Please take a message to her. Tell her that I will be there as soon as I can, but that I must go speak with the King of Stormwind. Tell her that he voted against Gilneas, but I believe there is still hope. Do you have that?"
"Yes, Archdruid."
"Go now, then." The sentinel saluted sharply, then rushed off. Malfurion took a breath, using the moment to organize his thoughts. "The vision insists that Varian is the one," the Archdruid thought with much frustration. "Perhaps he is, but the vision does not have to deal with his obstinacy. He must be convinced, or despite visions, the Alliance must find someone else." A determined look crossed his features. Varian Wrynn would listen. He went in pursuit of Stormwind's bitter king. Malfurion likely felt betrayed, and Varian could not blame him, but the Night Elf had been presumptuous to think that he could convince the Lord of Stormwind to change his mind. The King of Gilneas had much blood on his hands, human blood. Where had he been when Lord Aron had beseeched others for aid during the Third War? True, Stormwind had not directly participated in the war, but it had been a strong supporter of the Alliance. Stormwind had also been going through much more turmoil at that time, and Varian had been at the heart of most of that turmoil. Already a king at 18 due to his father's assassination, he had been trying to oversee the kingdom's reconstruction when he had been politically outmaneuvered after his wife's death by the foul sorcery of Lady Catrana Prestor, who in truth had been the black dragon Anixia. and when Varian had sailed at Lady Jaina's suggestion to Theramore for a summit, he had been kidnapped and subsequently lost his memory. No, Varian felt that he could not be blamed for Stormwind's inability to do more for the Alliance. Gen had been his own man and fully in charge when he had refused to answer the call more than once. He had built his damnable wall to seal off Gilneas. Then during the Third War, he had not deigned to contribute so much as a token force. That last affront had been too great even for some of his own people, who had taken up the challenge themselves and formed the valiant Gilneas Brigade. Varian felt no satisfaction for what he had said, but neither did he have any remorse. Gen Greymane had only gotten what he had much too long deserved. "Tomorrow we sail home," he informed the others as they neared their quarters.
"Father, not now, Anduin."
In what was an uncustomary anger, the prince waved off the rest of the party. Those assigned to guard the royal family's quarters hesitated, but Anduin stared them down until they, too, left. They all knew that look. They had seen it often in the father, but never in the son, until now. Ignoring what Anduin was doing, Varian entered their quarters. He seized the bottle of night elven wine he had started just before the summit and drank from it.
"Where are you, Brawl?" Varian muttered. The one thing that he had hoped would come of this fiasco of a gathering was a short reunion with the brawny druid who had fought beside him as a gladiator. Brawl, though, was on some mission for Malfurion, yet another reason for the king to be annoyed with his hosts.
"Father!"
"I said not now, Anduin."
"Yes, now."
For a boy barely in his teens, Anduin's tone was measured and strong, and full of disappointment. Putting down the bottle, Varian faced him.
"I did what needed to be done. You'll understand that when you're king."
"I understand that you're still living in the past, Father, that you can't ever seem to escape it. People change. People can redeem themselves. You've not given Gen Greymane any chance, and in doing that, you've also condemned the rest of his kingdom."
"They're fools enough to follow his lead, despite the bloodshed and horror his choices have caused. They can follow him through this."
"You don't mean that. Don't you see?"
"Enough!"
The outburst surprised Varian as much as it did his son. Anduin deflated. Varian read the immense sadness filling his son. The prince headed toward his room.
"Anduin, good night, Father. I pray you'll understand someday."
Not quite certain as to what his son meant by that, Varian returned to the wine. Then, thinking better of it, he stepped back outside. There he found his guards anxiously awaiting.
"Safe to go in," he jested. "I'll stay out here for a moment."
They did not argue. Varian felt some sympathy for the men, who wanted to do their duty but were constantly being dismissed by their charges. He would reward them when the party returned to Stormwind.
"Varian."
"Oh, by all that's holy, am I allowed no peace?" The king turned to face Malfurion.
"I said my lot back at the induction. There's nothing left to discuss."
The night elf's brow rose at this unexpected outburst.
"There is much left to discuss, if I may be so bold. I am aware of why you said what you did, and the right you had to say it. The summit, though, must continue, and
Your summits failed. You should know that. Failed like so much—"
Varian looked off as he spoke, his thoughts turning to distant memory, not the evening's events. The shift did not go unnoticed by the Archdruid. In a calm, quiet tone, he replied, "Failure is not always the end of things. It can be a method of learning to better succeed in other ways. Cenarius knows I have met with failure enough myself.
if I may use my brother, and perhaps the Worgen themselves, as examples. I can also appreciate the troubles you have struggled with, and I know the blame you still lay upon yourself for them. You still think that you could have saved Tiffin from the riot, or somehow prevented Deathwing's own daughter Anixia from stealing your kingdom while in the guise of Lady Prestar. Neither of those events could have been prevented by you. Couldn't they? Easy to talk so, after the fact, and so far removed, Archdruid, but you weren't involved in those troubles. My wife was killed by a brickbat. A good man, Reginald Windsor, was burned alive by the damned dragon's breath. I let agents of the Defias capture me, and in my absence my son, my only son, was left defenseless and abandoned. I will not let that happen again. Ever. You were not? Varian thrust a condemning finger in the Night Elf's face. You've no right to speak of any of this anyway. What do you even understand of the kind of horrors I've seen and suffered? Two wars came and passed while you cheerfully meditated and wandered that accursed emerald dream. Two wars in which countless lives were lost. You never saw the sacrifices Stormwind had to face, much less the rest of Azeroth, while Greymane sat back and did absolutely nothing. Nothing! You druids preach of the harmony of the world and the creatures on it, but harmony is easy to ask for when you don't have to struggle to survive like the rest of us. I understand more than you think, the archdruid started. I have faced war and strife too. When the Burning Legion first invaded. You must reach back 10,000 years for your example, Varian interrupted. And what about something a bit more recent, or relevant? The pair stood in silence, their unblinking gazes fixed upon one another. Malfurion radiated calmness, which only served to increase Varian's frustration. The Night Elf considered, then tried a different tack. Much of what you say is true. I will not deny that. I have made many mistakes, but I have sought to learn from them, learned to accept my shortcomings, and strived to do better for those around me. That is something a druid, gladiator, or ruler should always do. It was not by accident that the Night Elf mentioned Varian's past role. Without saying anything direct, he reminded the king that while Malfurion had been elsewhere during the most recent troubles, so had Varian. Stormwind had suffered for many years without its rightful monarch to guide it, first for a decade when Anixia had used her magic to influence Varian following Tiffin's death, and then after his kidnapping. While Varian had not had any choice in either incident, the fact that the king often yearned for a return to the days when he only had to deal with his own immediate future was something that the Night Elf would not let be forgotten at the moment. Has Gen done anything so terrible other than seek to do what he thought best for his people? The archdruid went on. Gilneas has suffered deeply and more than once because of those choices. Gen regrets that, and has offered to do everything he can to make amends. Do not judge him as you judge yourself, Varian. He will never stand a chance of redeeming himself if that is the case. Varian grunted. If that's all you can say to try to convince me to change my vote, you've wasted your breath, Archdruid. Stormwind leaves tomorrow. Whatever the rest of you want to do after that is your own choice. Varian, for a place surrounded by forest, it's damned hard for a man to even get a breath of air. I've said all I intend. If you will excuse me. The king all but shoved past the archdruid and headed toward the edge of Darnassus. He had not gone far when he heard footsteps behind him. The sound served to agitate him further. Are you so desperate, Night Elf? He snapped as he turned. The great archdruid! Yet it was not Malfurion, but rather Anduin, who had followed his father. Anduin,
I thought you'd gone to bed.
No. I was up.
There was something secretive in the prince's voice.
I heard voices. I heard everything.
With the Archdruid? You heard nothing that matters. We still leave tomorrow.
I'm not going with you.
The statement sounded so fantastic, so ridiculous, that at first Varian had to think whether he had actually heard his son speak it. Incredulous, he said, "Go get some sleep. We leave early." Anduin gave him a look that Varian usually reserved for himself when dealing with fool-headed courtiers.
"You never listen to me. Please listen now, father. I am not going with you.
You're tired. You..." Anduin looked exasperated.
"I should have done what I had planned, but I started to have second thoughts until I heard you and Archdruid Stormrage arguing. He couldn't make you see sense any more than I ever could, and he's lived more than 10,000 years.
"Age doesn't mean wisdom," Varian retorted, annoyed that the Night Elf should have more of his son's respect than he.
"I'm afraid I know that, father."
The moment Anduin said it, he looked as if he regretted it. "I've not come to renew our argument. I went to my quarters and started to write you a letter explaining everything."
"Son."
"What?" The prince held up a hand for silence, again very much mimicking his father's stance.
"I'm no warrior. We both know that. I've said it more than once. I'll never be you. My path lies elsewhere."
"You're heir to the throne," Varian insisted, using whatever course he could to convince his only child that he was being absurd.
"I'm not abandoning Stormwind, but I need to leave to complete what I've begun."
Despite being only 13 summers, at the moment Anduin sounded like a much older person.
"I started it with High Priest Rohan in Ironforge. You know what he said about me. Even you agreed with him about my potential."
"The light can help you when you come to rule Stormwind, but it's only a tool, like..."
"The light is no tool. The light is..."
Anduin smiled softly.
"Someday, I'll make you understand that, too. Father, I never felt more alive than during my training in Ironforge. Just think of it. As a priest of the light, I could do so much more for our people.
As king, you have the ultimate ability." Varian's heart pounded. Of all that was happening, this was the one thing with which he could not cope. His son would come home with him. There would be an end to this talk about the light, clearly a misguided influence. Varian would see to it that Anduin would overcome his lack of sufficient battle skills and train to become a proper ruler.
"Father?"
Anduin's smile faded.
"You aren't listening." "Fine. I tried."
The boy turned to leave. Something snapped in Varian. He saw his beloved Tiffin again, with their infant son snuggled in her arms. Tiffin faded away, leaving only the child. And then the child began to fade away. Varian could not let that happen. Without thinking, he lunged forward, snaring Anduin's arm. The prince let out a cry. Some of the overwhelming fear faded, and Varian realized that he was crushing Anduin's arm.
I...
The king released his grip. Anduin, his face filled with shock, grasped at his injured arm. He knew as well as his father that Varian not only could strangle a foe with one hand, but had several times. Few men there were who could match the strength of the legendary Logosh. And now, in a fit of utter madness, he had used that same might, however briefly, against his defiant son.
Anduin.
Varian could not summon words. The person most precious to him in all the world stood horrified at the sight of him. I never meant.
Their guard suddenly came running. Varian could only guess that they had heard Anduin's cry and feared for the prince's life.
Your Majesty, called the captain. Did someone attack the two of you?
It's all right, Anduin interjected, rubbing his arm.
There's no danger.
Is there, father?
No.
Anduin turned to leave again. Varian started to reach for him, but stopped the moment it appeared that the guards would follow his example and try to keep the prince from wandering away.
Where are you going, Anduin?
The prince paused and looked over his shoulder at his father.
To Velen.
I'm going with him and the Draenei when they depart. It did not startle the king, but did sting him. The prophet could probably speak far easier with his son than he could. Have you discussed this with him?
I talked to him about resuming my studies of the light.
You can do that back in Stormwind, with Archbishop Benedictus. Varian did not care how he looked to the guards. This was his son, and he was losing him. Anduin's brow furrowed at mention of the Archbishop.
Benedictus is not right for this.
I can't explain that. I just know. For what I need to learn, I need to go elsewhere. Rohan even once told me that. The king had not been aware of that little fact. He silently cursed the dwarf, silently cursed Velen, and then finally himself.
They can take my things to the ship, father.
Velen may not take you with him to the Draenei capital. Anduin paused to consider this, and Varian's hopes stirred. Then, if he won't take me with him, he'll know that I have to go elsewhere to achieve what I must. Goodbye, father.
Don't!
The former gladiator bit off what he was going to say, for the guards, more aware of what was happening, looked as if all they waited for was the smallest signal. Even a hint by their king that they should step in and surround the prince would have served enough as a direct order. His decision not to let them act brought the sad smile back to Anduin's face.
Thank you.
I swear by your mother that I'll never hurt you again, Anduin.
Not in any way.
He started toward his son with the intention of hugging him. The prince's eyes widened. He stepped out of reach, then replied,
I know.
Anduin walked off in what Varian could only imagine was the direction of the prophet's quarters. The king watched until his son was no longer visible to him, aware all the while that the last thing he had seen in Anduin's eyes was a shadow of fear that Varian might, after all, hurt him.
Your Majesty, the captain hesitantly began.
Are you certain we shouldn't?
You're dismissed,
he responded curtly.
All of you.
Aware of his mood, the guards obeyed swiftly and without question. Varian was, at last, left alone. And only then did he realize just how much he was afraid he would be that way for the rest of his life. Some of the certainty with which he had left his father began to evaporate the farther from the king Anduin got. Yet something continued to urge him on his course. He knew somehow that he would find Velen in the temple gardens again. The Draenei had just begun to meditate, and so was not disturbed by the youth's sudden appearance. But that did not mean that Velen had no inkling as to why Anduin had come.
You spoke with your father, the prophet murmured. I sense the troubles between you.
Anduin saw no reason not to be blunt.
Velen, I know my path now. I want to go with you.
The Draenei looked perturbed.
How did you find out?
What do you mean?
Matters have arisen that take me elsewhere.
I planned to choose another priest to act as representative of the Draenei and leave in the morning after giving my farewells to our hosts. His revelation cemented Anduin's course.
I knew nothing. I knew only that I can learn best if I come with you.
Your father.
I've told him.
The prophet frowned.